It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello and welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show. And today, we're going for a break from the norm of reviewing professional wrestling shows around the world to talk about one specific wrestler. And I have a couple of guests to discuss this with me. And we're going back to an old format that me and Christy used to do back in the day with some new twists and turns that Christy has come up creatively with. Haven't you, Christy?
I guess so. I was just thinking what I would like to do. And I figured talking about people's favorite wrestlers sounds like a lot of fun. So here we are.
But as you've been listening to us for the last 10 years or so, you probably know who our favorite wrestlers are or the ones we like the least. Anyway, so we thought it'd be a bit of a fun idea to bring on a special guest each time we do this show. And the first guest of this new format, which is going to be called what, Christy?
Now I don't remember what we were going to call it. Something like Wrestling's Favorites?
Wrestling Favorites, yes, that was it.
You sure put it me on the spot there, and I didn't even realize that we were going to do it. I figured you were going to name it at the very end.
All right then. Sorry, I apologize.
Thanks for that, James.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be mean. Wrestling favorites is what we're going to call it. Okay.
Or wrestling fan favorites.
Wrestling fan favorites was actually that was correct. Yes, we're going to call it wrestling fan favorites. We are going to explore a different wrestler each time we have a fresh guest on. So look forward to new guests in the future. And our first guest on this new show is Sonal. How are you doing, Mom?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. I always love talking wrestling with other people.
Well, we do too. This is the reason why we do this show. Essentially, I have friends all around the world and I do a podcast with them so I can talk wrestling with my mates, which is
That's the thing. I don't know anyone in real life. Like, none of my close friends or family like wrestling. So I just go to the people of the internet.
There's only one person who is a friend of mine who's done this show with us is Simon, and he likes wrestling, but he's not watching wrestling too much at the moment, so he hasn't been on very often. And the only other person, there's two other people we've met online from this podcast. One is Alex Watt, who lives in Manchester, and the other one is John Dinsdale, who I met him in Hull at the Deathmatch tournament earlier this year. I didn't go to the Deathmatch tournament, but me, him and his lovely partner had a nice lunch together, which was wonderful. But generally speaking, yeah, I just talk to my mates over the internet about wrestling. So
or,
we're going
to. Or you talk by yourself?
But then. Occasionally, I have to talk by myself because none of my mates are available.
And then the episode is like 7 minutes compared to 3 hours.
yeah, that's usually the best of Super Junior. The Today At series is usually that, where we try and do a small kind of wrapped up show of the results and opinions about things, and then me and Christy do it, and instead of 7 minutes, it's 3 hours.
I think that's the only good thing with my YouTube channel is I can like I do it myself, so I'm like, I can set like a time limit, but when I do like a live stream with someone for like another YouTube channel, it'll go on for like an hour and a half. I'm like, oh, this probably shows how much I can talk when like I'm not by myself and I don't have like a limit of because I need to edit.
Yeah, James doesn't do a lot of editing.
No, I'm kind of like raw output.
Yeah, if we
unless it's a real massive clanger. Unless it's a real massive clanger or a technical hitch. Yeah. It's like, no, it's part of the show's charm. Is how I feel about that. So the wrestler we are going to look at today is Dookie. But Snell, first of all, before we go there, what made you become a wrestling fan and why are we talking about Dookie?
It's a bit weird. So my journey into wrestling was a bit weird. So like most people like it their whole lives, but I got into it when I was about 18. And people are going to judge me and like do it. Me and my sister used to watch Total Divas on E. And so she started getting into wrestling and then we bought her tickets to see a WWE live show. She couldn't go. I went. She fell out of love with wrestling. I found wrestling.
That's awesome, though, because I always say that I really enjoy that a lot of people come to wrestling in various ways. And I always have conversations with guys who say that Total Divas doesn't do anything for wrestling or didn't do anything for wrestling. So knowing that someone like you is such an avid wrestling fan and who's a content creator and stuff, it came through this show that apparently no one cared about or watched. That's awesome.
Total Divas, like, I wasn't like, the drama was fine, but I liked, because with that, I think it's like you get small exposures of wrestling and what wrestling is. And then you can, like, so when I went to the live show, it wasn't completely new to me. It was just, I was seeing more of it. So, like, on the, if you watch Total Divas, you see the women's wrestling, but you also see some of the men's, especially if they were, like, linked to the female wrestlers. So, yeah, I normally, like, don't tell people because they're, Total Divas, but, like, I really like the show, and I think for a lot of people it did help them get into wrestling because it was on such a easy-to-access platform, like E. Was it E? Yeah. E Entertainment?
I think so. Yeah, I didn't watch it at the time, but, yeah, that, this is the thing. It's I hate to say this, but it's a bit like dealing drugs. If you give people a taste, eventually they will more.
You know what, wrestling, you know, comparing wrestling to drugs, it's very true. My mum would say that with the amount of money I spend on it.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more expensive hobby, to be honest with you.
Yeah, New Japan are really pushing that with all the pay-per-views as well.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose arguably they've never really kind of done that before in that sense. But, you know, it's all good. So why did you pick Dookie as your fan favorite?
Now, so Doki is a weird one. So obviously when he debuted, it was all because, like, El Desperado was injured. And I have at that point, I was already a massive Suzuki-gun fan. Like, that faction was one of my favorites. Despy was one of my favorites. And I love a good underdog. It happened with Yoshihashi. And it was the same with Doki. He was getting loss after loss after loss, but I could see something in him. And then obviously we've seen him grow and grow. And then I was lucky enough to meet him last year. And then he's been picking up big wins. And I just think, like, my favorites tend to change. Like, obviously for a long time it was Jay, before Jay decided to leave. And anyone who follows me on social media knows that. But I've always loved Doki. I love his style. I love his in-ring presence. So I was like, you know what? Got to show Doki some love, because I think he, not only, like, for me, he's grown on me, he's grown on the public. Like, everyone, it loves him so much.
I think that's the thing, is, like, the first time we mentioned Taichi on the Troopany show was in a New Japan review when he was announced just after Despy went out injured. And Alex Watt, God bless him, his response was, wait a minute, Taichi picked him. Is he going to be any good?
That's a fair analysis, to be
because Tai Chi was in his purposefully shit period. I think he's probably the best way of putting it.
generous.
Back when Tai Chi was not trying very hard. And so, you know, it was so, like, obviously since then we've learned that actually Tai Chi is actually really good. It was just, you know, not trying very hard for the sake
of, to be fair, when you
narrative storytelling.
When you asked me to pick my favorite wrestler, it was like a toss-up between, like, Doki and Taichi, because Taichi's another one where when I first got into New Japan, I hated him. But then there was, like,
everyone hated him. Yeah. I remember making, like, a series of GIFs of people hitting him in the face, and they were really popular.
Wasn't there the line, anyone but Taichi? I think that was...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then something, I can't remember when, but something just clicked and I became obsessed with the Holy Emperor.
It's remarkable, because myself and John did a review of the original All Together show from 2013 when he just signed New Japan, and it was part of Suzuki Goon, and everyone hated him. It was junior, it was skinny, he had so much heat, and Suzuki couldn't stand him. and he'd just come from All Japan, where Kawada hated him.
Not a liked person at that
time. The earliest match I've seen of Tai Chi, and we're going off the point here a little bit because this is what we do, the earliest match I've seen of Tai Chi was him tagging with Kawada when he was still a young boy in All Japan, And he's such a nice, fresh cut young man who's trying really hard. And you were like, oh, the future you have.
you know what's fascinating in that way? That I know that Tai Chi was really popular with the guys backstage. So yeah. The contrast between how fans felt about him and how characters felt about him versus how the guys actually felt about him is such a huge difference. Because I've seen all the pictures of like Naito and Tai Chi and Okada and Tai Chi, Goto and Tai Chi, Tanahashi and Tai Chi. They loved him. Like Okada spent time with Tai Chi's mother, you know? Yeah. He stayed over at his house. It's so weird that there's such a disconnect between the guy and the character.
They still even do it in kayfabe now. If Kawada runs into Tai Chi, they're never more than cordial in public.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It shows like the difference of like what can happen. But I really like that suddenly there was a moment again where the whole crowd were like, actually. And I think it may be linked when he was having matches with like Ishii and Shingo and stuff. And like you said, like you could see his talent and everyone was like, oh my God, actually, we love Tai Chi. And then obviously Suzuki Gun slowly started to become... not baby faces, but I guess tweeners.
Yeah. And it took a while for the Western fan base. It always takes the Western fans a bit longer. But eventually they got there with Tai Chi as well. And yeah. James, do you want to talk about your first impressions of Doki or should I go first?
You go first.
Because I have a similar story about Doki. My first introduction to him was Desperado's Twitter account.
Mm.
Because they would talk to each other a lot. And it was like, I would have a couple of minutes to myself and I'd just check what Desperado was up to, you know, because Desperado's my favorite wrestler. And he would be talking to this guy called Doki. And he would call him his brother and I hope to see you soon and stuff like that. And then right after his injury, he introduced Doki as his replacement. And I was like, oh, it's that dude from Twitter. The one who's in pictures with Desperado all the time. So that's my introduction to Doki. And I see a lot of Desperado in him. And as someone who loves Despy, I could not help but fall in love with Doki as well. So...
I think for me, it was, I kind of saw him and he did seem like a bit of a ring filler to start with and didn't really stand out to me. And then there was an article that New Japan World did and they translated it as well, interviewing Doki and Desperado about their days in Mexico. And I'm like, that's way more interesting than what he's doing in the ring. They should talk about that more. And to their credit, Charlton and Kev, as much as we dislike him these days,
our good buddy Kevin Kelly,
Darlene and Kev did talk about it an awful lot, and that kind of like made me root for him more, because it's like he's one of those guys I tend to like. I like the guys who've been around the block, who've gone the path less trodden, because you know they want it more, you know they have beaten, you know they've done everything they can to do this thing that they love, and they've gone the hard way about it. And there's lots of wrestlers in the past that have proven it can be done. Ultimate Dragon is probably the best example of that. A guy who couldn't get into the New Japan Dojo because he wasn't tall enough. Wow, you really weren't thinking about that at all, were you? And then went off to Mexico, learned, you know, wrestling on the dirt floors, and just like Doki did, and worked his way back to the Tokyo Dome the non-traditional way. And, you know, it's like, so to me, it's like that intrigued me more than actually watching him wrestle to start with. And then as he got more rounded and became a more rounded professional wrestler, I was much more into what he ought to offer me as a visual prospect, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of started rooting for him when I realized how far he had come to get to New Japan Pro Wrestling.
That's the thing. I think he came into it with a chip on his shoulder. Like most people who come from Mexico, he was like, all of these people have... I can't remember the words, but he basically said, like, they had it easy. They had, like, a king, you know what I mean? They had places to sleep, places to eat. And Doki spoke so many times about having a I think it was in the recent interview before his match against Show, saying that he was wrestling and he took a bump and it was on like a concrete floor. He was getting paid like literally nothing. And it's just like, this is someone who loves professional wrestling and has finally, after years and years, got to the place maybe that was a dream for him when he started, but took much longer than most people.
Yeah, and he came to New Japan as a replacement.
Yeah.
That must also be kind of rough, you know? He wasn't the first choice.
Yeah, like, you're only in the best of the Super Junior because Desperado couldn't make it.
Yeah.
There's been some good things come out of that, though, and horrible for the people who got injured, obviously. David Finlay had his major roster debut as a member of Best of Super Junior as well.
I mean, I completely agree, but it must also feel kind of shitty for him to know that he wasn't invited. It was because Desperado got injured and he's friends with Desperado. So not even because of his wrestling.
Yeah, they were really struggling and Desperado was like, I've got this person. And they were like, okay, we need somebody now.
I do also think, though, Gedo and Jado were the two of the first wrestlers to take the path Doki took. You know, they were... I can't remember which one was All Japan, which one was New Japan, but they both ended up in New Japan at one point in the early 90s. And when their contracts were up, they went, this isn't the right way of going about it. There has to be a different way of doing it rather than just being a salaryman wrestler. And they went to UWA in Mexico and they did work in UWA in Japan and they worked for Michinoku Pro and then Wing and they did death matches and they went back to Mexico. And they learned all of these styles. And you look at the way New Japan is booked now, and it's an amalgamation of all of those styles that they learned about in the 90s and the 2000s and 2010s. That was a long sentence. I should have breathed more. I see Gedo and Jado looking at a guy like Doki and going, he's actually gone about it the right way, because that's what we did. And I think they connect with him that way, because he's... And it's a bit the same with Ishimori, in the sense of Ishimori is one of those glue guys who can do anything. Well, Doki is one of those glue guys who can do anything as well because of his experiences outside of a New Japan environment. It's given him this breadth that a lot of the young boys coming up don't have. And I think that Gedo and Jado can see that and use it to their advantage as well.
I think that's the thing that, like, I hate to say it and like put it in like, put them with like people like Goto and stuff, but. Because obviously Goto went through the dojo, but you know you can put them with anyone, almost anyone, maybe not House of Torture, and they will put a good match on. They can put Doki with anybody and he's going to have a good match. And what I like about Doki is it's not just his wrestling is good, he brings out the emotion. There's something like, even when he was like a heel, and now that you can tell he's a babyface, his emotions adapt and the way he interacts with the crowd adapts. And again, like you said, it comes from years and years of experience outside of mainstream wrestling, where he was probably having to wrestle in front of like 10 people who couldn't, like, who didn't care. And he had to get
them. Understand. That's also a thing. He spent so much time in Mexico having to explain a story to people who didn't speak his language. So it's all mannerisms and having to act through a mask as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells a story with his entire body and his face, the parts that you can see, in a way that not a lot of other wrestlers would have had to.
Yeah. I think we should probably take that as a good point to talk about our first match. So the way we're going to format the show is we are going to look at three matches from three different points in the wrestler's career. So the first match is the earliest match I could find that was of significance. So we don't want like the rookie outing of him getting beaten up by somebody who's 10 times larger and 50 years old. We wanted something that was a bit more balanced than that. So this is from IWRG Mexico. It's a number one contenders bout for the international, the IWRG Intercontinental Lightweight Championship, which implies is also a lightweight championship, which is like, why is this Mexican indie got three different levels of lightweight championship? But anyway, it's the most luchador thing possible. This was from IRWG Zona 21 on the 24th of November 2013. We will link this up in the social media when we post this. and he's wrestling Dragon Celestial. I hope my Spanish pronunciation is correct, or anywhere near would be good. And this is a really fun match, actually. It's best of three falls, as all Lucha Championship level matches are. And it was interesting because I've never seen Dragon Celestial wrestle before. And it was interesting seeing Dookie in such a different environment than what we used to. But interestingly, he jumps Dragon Celestial before the bell. I wonder if that will come back later in our conversation. Anywho, what's your
first... Probably not.
Possibly. What's your first thoughts on this one, Sonal, as I think you probably will not have seen this before?
Yeah, it was the first time you've seen this, because, like, I'm not one of those people. You know, you have those wrestling lovers who are like, they'll do it and they'll go back to, like, in the archives. I have done that, but, like, normally it's within New Japan, not, like, different companies. So seeing this, just want to say Doki, I hate to be, but, like, the shape that Doki's in now, comparing it to then, like, he's so much leaner and more muscular. Because, obviously, he has a similar ring gear then as he does now. But what I love, and it's... Because even when he debuted, although he was a heel, this was, like, proper heel. And like you said, like, him jumping before the bell, in the sense, like, he still had a very similar style. Like, he was doing suplexes, he was bridging. But everything now is so much cleaner. And that's something that, like, makes me love him even more. Because you can see how much he has grown from that match. And that he was, like, he was embracing the Lucha style. He was embracing being, I think, in Mexico, is it a Rudo? Is that what
Yeah, yeah, the Rudos. Yeah.
Yeah. He was embracing that persona, and it was refreshing to watch it, because it's like you can see the bits of Doki from now, but everything's just tuned a lot more and a lot more refined.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with you. He wins the first fall with a Dragon Suplex as well, which is kind of like kind of becomes his bread and butter of one of the big moves he has. And I think as well, it's kind of a classic Lucha indie crowd. They really aren't reacting to an awful lot. I think I looked at the cage match of it. It's like it's the third match on the card or the fourth match on the card. So even though it's a higher level match, they're not there for this particular match. There's not an awful lot of them there.
Was very sparse. It looked like maybe it was like one of the low key events, and people might come later as they wait for the.
Yeah,
matches.
It's like Christy was saying, he's trying to explain this story to a bunch of people who aren't really that interested. But he gets there, he gets the match over as the heel, and you know, as a Rudos, you kind of like have the responsibility to lead the storytelling, because that's kind of how wrestling works. And he manages to make it work, and I love like the big pantomime reactions he's having to do, and you know. It's really interesting to me to watch him in this situation compared to the last match we watched today, which is he's headlining a sellout show, you know, and it's the evolution and the fine tuning of that towards the audience he's working with. Christy, what did you think about this?
It's interesting you say that it's like the third or fourth match, because if you told me that this was the dark match before the show started, I would have believed it. Because there were like 25 people there.
Yeah, I'll look it up because I definitely saw it and I was like, that seems a bit late on early on the show for you know a match of supposedly this magnitude, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, but still third or fourth. There's been a couple of matches before this, so everyone who was like a couple of minutes late would have arrived already. So this is the people who are. There to watch the entire show, and it's like 20 people.
This is like the mid tournament. Like at the opening match, might have had like 5 people like watching.
four of them were the ones who set up the ring.
It reminds me of two of my friends when they went to Bradford to see this small band no one had heard of called Green Day. And they saw them at the Brown Cow, and there was them, there was the two people behind the bar, and Green Day. That was the year they released Dookie, which is funny enough, a slightly misspelling of the Dookie.
Yeah.
But there you go. So yeah, but I'm trying to find the card now.
I'll keep talking until you find
please,
it.
Please, talk.
Okay, so I had a look at how old Doki would have been here. He would have been about 22. And I think he looks it on the one hand. I think he looks young, but he also looks the same. Like I understand what you meant, so now he doesn't look as buff as he looks now. He clearly didn't have time to be in the gym as much as he is now, but he had the same mannerisms that he still has, and you could tell that a lot of the stuff he learned then he took along with him. But there's also some things that he clearly didn't take with him. There were a couple of very, very, it's going to sound weird, very Mexican gestures to the crowd.
Mm.
And he didn't take those with him. But he is, in this match, the same way that he is in current matches, very, very emotive, very larger than life. Even though he's quite small, he appears much bigger because he makes huge gestures with his hands and his arms, and his hair whips all over the place. And it's funny to see that so much of that Doki is still in him now. A lot of wrestlers would take parts of their younger selves with them, but not this much. Like, he has the outfit and the hair and the mask and the mannerisms and even a lot of the moves. So 80% of the Doki we have now is visible in this match already.
Yeah, it's porn perfect been that way ever since.
Yeah, including like using his flexibilities to avoid moves and getting a pin through being sneaky, you know? The only thing we don't see yet here is the flying. As much the high flying moves,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense if you're wrestling on concrete.
Yeah, that is the thing. Is like Mexican rings around this time, they're a lot more bouncy than they used to be. But Mexican rings around this time were kind of like, I think Devitt had a guest show on a CMLL show, obviously with the New Japan CMLL deal. And his first opening move on his first show is like, I'm going to show everybody how to do, was drop kick off the top rope, back bump. And he got as far as the back bump and then curled up into a ball and couldn't move for 5 minutes because he had not realized how stiff the ring was before landing that particular drop kick. So I think, yeah, the flying moves would not really come in. Plus, like we were saying, it's the third match on the show, so they're kind of trying not to steal the show. Realistically, good soldiers would not like outpace the main event, if you see what I mean. So there is kind of a level of tamp down expectations a bit as well.
Doki tried one high flying move and it didn't work out. So
no. The main event on this show was awesome. I want to see this main event just because of the names involved. Lost Traumas.
Oh my god.
Trauma 1 and Trauma 2. Went up against La Familia de Tijuana, Eterno and Supernova. But it was a three-way tag match, and the match was won by Venomo and Alan Extreme.
Alan, that's an amazing name to have in that lineup.
Ladies and gentlemen, pray silence, Mr. Alan Extreme. Alan Extreme's, he's still wrestling, he's 33, and his current gimmick is Mr. Mike.
Gone from Alan to Mike, really? You can't get better than that.
That's amazing. I want to watch this guy.
From very common name to very common name.
He's still wrestling for IWRG after a 14-year career. Awesome. He's having a career, and that's the main thing. And I love that indeed, and that for him in general. But yes, this was third match on the show. Also underneath, Kenneth Lupus versus Golden Magic. And several hundred other wrestlers I had never heard of, unfortunately.
These names are great, honestly. The proper
Emperado Azteca. I'm pretty sure he's wrestled for Glade at some point. I mean, well, yes, because Glade is awesome.
I agree. I've never watched it, but I believe you when you say it.
Yes.
I've watched a few of Gleet's stuff, and they were always amazing.
Yeah, see? There you go. See? Gleet, it's the way forward. It's wrestling as it's meant to be. Just saying.
Oh, let's not get started on what wrestling is. That's the Twitter discussion that's been going on for weeks now.
Indeed, yes. Emperado Azteca is the only person on the list I've actually heard of. He does wrestle for Gleet. He's a member of Black Generation International. He's quite good. Rest of them, not so much. Which will show you how far Dookie has come. Like, because he essentially went from IWRG to New Japan pretty much straight away in 2019, wasn't it, that he joined the New Japan 19. Roster. So the next match that we're going to discuss is Sonal's Choice, which was Dookie versus Hiromu Takahashi earlier this year at New Beginnings. Why did you pick this particular match?
This was, it was kind of a selfish choice because I am a massive Hiromu fan as well. So I'm killing two birds with one stone here. But I think the thing, so when this match was announced, because I remember I did a preview of the show and I knew everyone was saying, this is a stupid match. This is just, there's no reason for it. Hiromu is going to win. I was one of those people who thought otherwise. I could see the improvement in Doki and had continued to see it. And even watching this match, what I loved is that after years of being like the underdog and Hiromu being the top of the card, the match itself was perfectly paced. There was moments where you thought Hiromu was going to win, and then a part where the Hiromu fans were like, oh my God, Doki could win. But then it changed again. And then, when he got the win, the reactions that of me and like everyone watching, it was just like stunned silence. But you know when you watch, you know when you feel like a proud mother watching your child? I felt like that. I was like, after all this time, Doki has finally got, like, he's picked up wins in the past, but this was by far his biggest win in New Japan.
I can completely understand that. When do you think was that breakthrough point for him? When do you think he got good and was when is there a specific thing you can pinpoint to say, that's the one, that's the moment? Because I have one.
Because I've always been a fan of Doki. I've always loved his style. I think, and it's a bit of an odd one, maybe the move to just five guys probably helped. Because he suddenly went from, if you think about it, being overshadowed as the junior, because he was obviously overshadowed by Desperado and Kanemaru, to going to just five guys. And then when Kanemaru left, it was suddenly the weight was on him. Because as much as we say, Taka Michinoku's not getting the wins for the junior division in that faction.
We love Taka, but yes,
we love Taka. He's basically like, he's even higher on the electrician meter than Bushi when it comes to getting in.
New Japan putting them in a feud just because they're the ones who take all the pins was really funny.
I was obsessed with that. I was like, oh my God, somebody is going to lose their job as the electrician today. But I think that just five guys gave Doki the platform to shine as himself. He obviously had the big characters like Tai Chi and that, but he wasn't overshadowed by so many of them. He could showcase who he was and be that top junior. And I think he gained a lot of confidence as well, being in a much smaller unit.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the one for me was I saw how he improved in the Best of Super Juniors in 2022. And he just seemed to be a bit more of a complete package. And Christy's going to moan because I'm going to talk about Gleet again. But he went to Gleet for a couple of tag matches with Suzuki, Minim Ganemaru, wrestled El Linderman, Yuiska, and Sonwa Anabe. Not at the same time, obviously. There was two different matches. But they did that as a build-up to Linderman having a shot against Dookie because Desperado was going to challenge Linderman for the Gleet G-Rex Championship, and Dookie was kind of the tune-up. Like, you know, send Dookie first to weaken Linderman, and then Desperado was going to wrestle Linderman. I'm not sure actually if the Desperado match ever happened in the end. That's kind of the storyline Gleet were pushing. And Dookie had his first main event at Currican Hall, and they tore the place up. it was outstanding to watch. And it was like, this guy's ready to be a main event guy. And Lindemann's one of the best junior heavyweights in the world. So, you know, hanging with him for 25 minutes is an achievement in itself. But he did not look out of place. He looked like he owned the place. And it was like, yeah, he's ready. He needs the right angle. And it's amazed me that it took them 18 months to get the right angle. But, you know, there's a lot of business going on in that junior heavyweight division for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Sometimes you got to wait your turn. And I don't think they run it too late because he's on one and he's got this kind of level of competence and just sheer capability that he didn't have before. Christy, do you have a moment when Dookie got good?
Not so much a moment because I was gone for the formative years where he got good.
Yeah.
But I can understand the Just Five Guys comments because I think character-wise that was a real bonus for him. And you know, I love the character stuff more so than the technical wrestling stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what I gravitate towards. But just him being, and this is going to sound really weird because I love Desperado, but him being away from Desperado helps a lot because Doki and Desperado have a lot of things in common. So if you want something like that, then you're probably going to gravitate towards the successful one who's in all the big matches, you know, and in all the big feuds. So Doki was left behind a bit. Whereas in Just Five Guys, you've got, yes, Tai Chi has a really big personality, but Tai Chi has a personality that tries to make people pay attention to the others.
Mm.
And Sanada and Yuya and Taka aren't guys with huge personalities.
Mm-hmm.
So he could not so much stand out as be on their level much more than in Suzuki-gun, where you had Suzuki, you had Desperado, you had Taichi, you had Zack, who are all clamoring for attention and getting it from New Japan, versus Doki, who wasn't at the time.
Mm.
And now he is. Now he's in commercials and TV shows and active on Twitter all the time, and Tai Chi is constantly putting him in videos and stuff.
I was gonna say, like, Tai Chi's creation of his YouTube channel has made Just Five Guys a lot more, like you were saying, like Sanada, Yuya, their personalities might not be bright, but for example, Tai Chi did a live stream yesterday and Uemura appeared on that, and it's just made them a lot more likable and relatable.
Yeah, personable.
Yeah. Because they're just chilling out, just like friends.
Yeah, and I think that's a bonus for someone like Doki, because in Suzuki-gun, he was firmly on the bottom of the totem pole. Mm-hmm. So if you want to like him for something other than his achievements, a YouTube channel works really well. You get to understand who he is. And that's always been my gripe with New Japan, is that a lot of the less popular guys don't get a lot of exposure, especially for people who don't speak Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really understand what they're about. So you don't fall in love with them the way we fell in love with, like, Desperado. And that's Doki's advantage as well. He has the same thing that Despy has. He emotes and he has great comedic timing. So he can get over even if you don't understand what he says.
Mm-hmm.
But it does help a lot to have someone like Tai Chi put a camera in his face and show him to the world the way New Japan might not.
So, Christy, what's your thoughts on this second match? Because the one with the Hiromu is kind of a watershed moment, isn't it?
Yeah. It's funny that this was the match that you chose, because I figured this was going to be the one. Because I don't know you very well, but what I've seen alludes to this being something you would be passionate about. Not only having Doki make this huge step in the right direction as someone who New Japan trusts to put in a position like this. Like, a year or two ago, he never would have beaten Hiromu, because I don't think New Japan saw that in him, but they see it in him now. So I expected this match to be the one, and I was really excited to watch it again because I remember being very emotional the first time I watched this, and there was a lot going on during this time in the fandom. So I was a bit distracted by all the arguing about, you know, House of Torture and stuff like that. So getting to watch it again was great, especially because I watched all three matches in a row. I watched them yesterday. So I watched the first one in like a small arena with 20 people and a scruffy looking Doki who's still very young. And then out came Doki in this match. And I was like, oh, bless having the money for quality gear. He looked great. And also bless the camera work, by the way.
I was just going to say, like, having a regular diet and being able to get to the gym on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's
which true. which is what happens when you get signed to a big company, is you can. I do think back to when Doki debuted, and he wasn't that much different to the IRWG match, but he has, like, now he's like the guy that's always favorite to win the bodybuilding contest at the end of the year now. And you think back to that debut match he had with Suzuki, and he wasn't unfit, clearly. You know, he's a professional wrestler, but he wasn't as sharp as he looks now. Definitely not.
Yeah. And just seeing him wrestle, like I said, there's a lot of mannerisms and stuff that he took with him, but the moves and stuff are just cleaner, crisper, and I would almost call it beautiful. He is very fluid, and he moves in a way that not a lot of wrestlers do. A lot of wrestlers move to get to the moves they want to do. And Doki, for some reason, feels like he thinks about the movement as well. Like, how am I going to get there? And what can I do while I'm trying to get there? You know? So he is a very crisp, beautiful wrestler. And then you've got Hiromu, who brings out all the emotion and passion in him.
Mm-hmm.
And just watching that match and seeing it go from Hiromu chants to Doki chants, and the look on Hiromu's face when he realized that people were chanting against him.
You know whose reaction I like on that? Red Shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can just imagine what Doki was feeling in that moment. Yeah, it's like, it's not just that it's a Doki chant. It's a Doki chant against Hiromu.
Yeah.
The most popular junior in the division and one of the most popular wrestlers in New Japan, bar except maybe Naito. So to have that happen must mean a lot to him. And to know he's going to win it too, yeah, must have been amazing.
You just reminded me of referees' reactions. What was that referee doing in that Lucha match? Because he was more physically active doing...
Yeah, that huge jump to get into the 1-2-3.
Yeah, and
he was being really dramatic. He was loving. He was like, "I'm gonna make this time count for me.
I'm gonna jump over both of the wrestlers to do the 1-2-3."
He did. He jumped. He did a flip over he did jump over the top rope to get to the wrestlers who were outside. And it was like, people complain about Bryce Rensburg. They've got nothing on this guy.
This is an ex wrestler who got injured and couldn't wrestle anymore, and he's like, "I'm gonna do as much as I still can, damn it."
Yes, I'm going to. Yeah, because the majority of Lucha referees are fairly immobile.
Yes,
partly by choice, because they don't want to show off and upset the people who are wrestling. Obviously, if you start doing fancy moves whilst the wrestlers are there, when they are indeed the kings and queens of fancy moves, because it's Lucha, you're going to show up the wrestlers. So don't. But this guy went to a different school of thought on that. So yes,
he didn't like either of the two. Like, I'm gonna show you up.
Yeah, that's it. There you go. But yeah, Aubrey, Bryce Rensburg, AEW referees, you're doing a fine job in comparison to this guy. Anyway,
you should include a flip in your next 1-2-3.
Bryce Ward. Have you not seen the match of Bryce refereeing the Invisible Man versus the Invisible Man?
I have not, and I will not be watching it.
You will not be watching it. Oh,
sorry to disappoint you.
That sounds like something I would watch, so I probably will go out.
I will send it. Someone tweeted it the other day. It's like the full-length match. I will see if I can find it for you.
I'm glad I introduced you to each other. This is going to be a great friendship, I can already tell.
Hey. Where was we? Yes, so the second match. Sal, have you got anything else you would like to add?
I want to bring up, like, you mentioned earlier about, like, the big distinction of the cheers for Hiromu and the cheers for Doki. And well, that's the thing. Hiromu, like you said, he's one of the most popular wrestlers in New Japan. There is a very rarely anyone who can make you swap sides. I bet you, even if you put Hiromu in the ring with Naito, Hiromu will still probably maybe come out more popular because he has that lovable vibe. And you've got two men in the ring who are equally as passionate, but show it in different ways. Like, you have some wrestlers who they can mask their lack of emotion with their in-ring skills, or that is part of them. I know people have criticized Sanada for that. I love Sanada, so I will never criticize. But obviously, Sanada's persona in the ring is a lot more mellow and calm. But when you have two such passionate people like Doki and Hiromu, it was always going to be a recipe for success. And having it now, where it was like, I think it's been like the start of Hiromu's losing streaks, but then also the start of Doki's like winning streaks. It was the perfect timing for both wrestlers.
Yeah, I feel like they're like Hiromu is passion in what he does and what he says. And then Doki just exudes it, like his energy is passion. I don't know if that makes sense, but
no, I get what you mean. But it goes back to the IWRG stuff we were saying, like, you know, he learnt in an audience where he couldn't really be verbal, and he had to pantomime everything to as big as he possibly could be. And now, because he's doing it from TV cameras, you don't see this very often in Japanese wrestlers. He understands he doesn't have to try so hard to get to the TV audience. And people understand him, so he doesn't have to try so hard to get to verbally to the Japanese audience. And he can speak English if he wants to, so he can speak to the Western audience.
Oh, he speaks fluent. When I spoke to him, he speaks fluent English. Like, he loves interacting with the fans, but I think that's one of the things about New Japan and sometimes maybe Western fans don't always understand that when wrestlers wrestle and the storylines and stuff, they're not catering only to the people and the storyline. They're not catering just to the people watching at New Japan World. They're catering to the people who are buying tickets.
Yeah.
The people who will probably feel more from guys like Doki, because like you said, it's not what he's saying, it's how he's doing it. It's the nuances that maybe they'll be able to see more in person.
Yeah. And I think that he's kind of inwardly turned all that excess energy he doesn't need anymore into his wrestling. Like, it flows for him better because, all right, I don't have to concentrate quite so much on telling the story out loud. I can do it through my body motion. I'm going to concentrate on that and let the wrestling tell the story for me.
Yeah, you know, another point I love about Doki is that a failing is a very big part of every match he's in, because his big move, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that about a wrestler, because one, it sets up losses really easily, but it also sets up wins. But it also sets Doki's personality up as someone who doesn't care. He's going to do it anyway because it means something to him.
And it means you want to support him more, because you can see that after adversity, after a setback, he still wants to carry on.
Yeah, and he still wants to use that move. So the moment he hits it, you're like, he did it. That's a story in itself. Watching Doki hit his finishers is like, oh my god, he hit it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing as well. It's because it does make you want to root for him. I remember there was an old story, and it was basically that story. There was a guy, it was during the FWA matches in the UK in Morecambe, and Johnny Kidd was the main event star, and there was another wrestler called Jimmy Kidd, or a very similar name, who tried to do the same finishes as Johnny Kidd and could never get it to work until one day he did, and the crowd went nuts because they told that story of he can't do this, he's never going to be able to make it, it's never going to work, and then it does work, and all of a sudden you believe. And that's the story they've been telling with Doki, and that's very much part of that. You're right, it's you know, how you've got to have some fallibility. Everybody's got to have a chink in their armor. Otherwise, it's boring.
Yeah, I just also love that he's okay with that. because a lot of wrestlers would be like, the story is going to be I feel my move. No, we're not doing that.
It's like Doki doesn't see he needs the protection. He knows that he trusts New Japan. He knows that whatever they're doing it to help him, and he's just going to trust the process. And it obviously worked, because after years of losing and losing, this moment was like, it was like him, it was the equal level of him main eventing Wrestle Kingdom for Doki fans.
Yeah. I also think for him, it's, I'm sorry to bring him up again, but he saw that what New Japan did for Desperado, who was in a very similar position and is now the big star, so he could trust them to do it with him as well. And I think they are. I think they're telling a very similar story.
I think that's, like you touched on, they trust. This is, and I don't want to go off like on a tangent, because I tend to.
Oh, don't worry about that. That's fine.
We do that all the time. Tangents are like 30 minutes.
You touched upon it, you know, like the Hiromu Doki match was in the midst of all this House of Torture stuff. It's why when I see Western fans complaining so much about the booking in New Japan, and I just want to say, like, just trust them. Like, New Japan can make mistakes, but, like, they can make it right. Like, House of Torture getting all the wins, and then they had that match, the one that I sadly couldn't watch because I was away, the one, you know, where they had House of Torture lose every match. And I think, and I still like to think, that if Yo hadn't got injured, Sho would also have lost. You know, to make like a full circle of like, oh, House of Torture used this tactic to win, but now they're going to get their comeuppance.
Yeah, so, we feel very similarly about this, and
I don't, but I can understand your point of view.
Yeah, though, about the O or about the how
about the House of Torture kind of Western fans' reactions to House of Torture.
I think it's not just House of Torture. I feel like now every booking is criticized.
I can't stand House of Torture. But I don't think it's a booking issue. Like, I understand why it's booked like that, and I understand that that will draw a crowd for a certain portion of the Japanese audience. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I find it boring.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like House of Torture either. I think that, considering, like, aside from Evil and Yujiro, they have some very strong talent.
I like Evil. I like all of the wrestlers individually. I even like Yujiro. But I don't, as a unit, doing boring things over and over and over again with a warmed-up Osaka programming, no.
Yeah, like, I feel like people like Yujiro probably need the shenanigans, because we're not going to say he's never going to be like IWGP World Champ, like, quality. His matches are never going to be like
not
that.
Not now, no.
No, but maybe like No Limit Yujiro probably.
Yeah, 10 years ago he was cooking, but not right now.
Whereas you've got people like Kanemaru, Sho. I mean, gosh, when Sho was in Roppongi 3K, he was one of my favourite wrestlers. Maybe we would have had a different person here if Sho would have stayed there.
Yeah.
Obviously, Narita. They have wrestlers who are able to put on good matches. It's just, I think, they sometimes choose. Like, I think we've seen it in matches. Like, with, you know, Jack Perry.
Yeah.
Before he was taken away from us. He had a great match.
He was gone too soon.
Yeah.
Here's the whole headcanon about that. Like, so does that mean the Elite is part of House of Torture?
I said this. I'll put this theory out on Twitter, and I don't know if anyone agreed with me. Like, and this is completely wild, but you know, like, years ago when Jay was in New Japan as head of Bullet Club and there was a mole?
Yeah.
I think it's Okada, because now Okada is teaming with the Elite, who are counted as Bullet Club, teaming with Jack Perry, who is House of Torture. So I now like to think, because they never revealed who he was, I'm going to say it's Okada.
It's a strong possibility.
Would be funny.
That would be
really funny. But I understand what you mean, though, about the fan reaction. Because I feel like, because New Japan is not in their golden days, you know, they don't have the big stars that they used to have. Everyone assumes the worst. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to be the one who said, oh, this is awful, than to be the one who said this is great and then have everyone say you're wrong.
Yeah,
I feel like the fandom is very much in a situation where everyone is very negative, and that fosters more negativity.
So I unfollowed the Reddit. I don't, during shows, I normally just stick to like I don't even scroll during the shows. Like, I just tweet my own stuff. But that's the thing. Like, I, aside from Jay, who was at the top of the company, my favorites have never been the big stars.
Same.
And so I feel like as each star is gone, I'm like, well, personally, to me, it's made no difference. Like, it was when Kenny and the Bucks left. Everyone thought, oh, it was going to be the worst thing ever. For me, I didn't even notice they were gone.
No, I didn't either, to be honest. I like the Bucks and I like Kenny, but I didn't really miss them. In the same way, I don't really miss Okada. As much as Okada was my favorite wrestler in the company, I don't miss him from the company because I like watching the company.
That was me with Jay. I thought when Jay was one of the reasons I stuck with New Japan, and when he said he was leaving, I thought, oh my God, like, what is this going to mean? It didn't impact me, not just because I think prior to that, he wasn't really coming as often because like COVID and stuff. But I realized when he left, I realized, I didn't love New Japan because of Jay. I probably love Jay because of New Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there was an interesting story about when Muta was booking All Japan and he left to form Wrestle One. A lot of the All Japan fans stopped watching All Japan and started watching Wrestle One because they liked Muta's booking style. And then the All Japan fans just went back to All Japan because it went back to doing what they were doing before Muta. Because I think there is a kind of like, I think we probably like a certain style of wrestling, and that style of wrestling is not going to go away in New Japan because the booking crew is always going to be relatively the same. And the talent base is relatively the same, and the rookies who come in and out are trained in roughly the same way and have excursions which are very similar. So the actual core of what's happening in that company is not going to change that much, is it?
Yeah, I also feel like it's a difference in what you like as a wrestling fan, because a lot of people who loved New Japan because of the quality matches are kind of soured on New Japan now because they don't have the stars that they used to have. They don't have Kenny. They don't have Okada. They loved the style that Bullet Club had, and they loved Bullet Club, Kenny Omega's Bullet Club, and they're all gone now. So if that was what got you into New Japan and what kept you invested, I can understand that you don't like New Japan right now. But someone like me, like my favorites were in 2017, were Desperado, Goto, Yoshihashi and Hiromu.
Oh my God, thank you. Oh my God. Whenever I hear someone who says that they love Yoshihashi and Goto, I'm like, thank you, because I have, I do sometimes like podcasts with True Heel Heat, and they always take the mick out of me because I have such a love for Yoshihashi and Goto.
Christy, we have to introduce Sonal to Marcus, don't we?
We should. Yeah, but I think that's the thing. Like, I loved those guys before they were quote-unquote good, according to the fandom. Like Hiromu, yes, everyone loved Hiromu from the very beginning he showed, very moment he showed up. But Desperado took a couple of years, and Goto took a couple of years, and Yoshihashi especially took people a couple of years.
A career?
Yeah, to appreciate. So I think what you expect from New Japan is what's the issue here. Like, I loved seeing people grow. I loved the stories. That's not changed.
New Japan
still does the same thing.
And I don't think the quality in matches has come down that much. You're not going to get 45-minute Omega Ricardo epics like you used to. But is that necessarily a good thing, bad thing? Because it's like, they were killing themselves in those matches. Kenny has not had a full 6 months of action in AEW since he started there.
I think about similarly to like Ibushi. Ibushi was putting on these really long, elaborate matches, and obviously it took a toll on his body as well.
Yeah, and Ibushi's been doing that for 20 years too. And like last time I saw Ibushi was on that Noah show, and it was
hard to watch.
Hard to watch, yeah. And it's like, you know, say it like time and time again, there is no ethical way to watch professional wrestling, but you do kind of like wonder in the long run, sometimes it's a change of style and a change of pace is not a bad thing. And I will watch Naito main event forever and a day, if you're not going to wrestle forever and a day, but you know what I mean? He can have those kinds of matches with minimal effort.
Yeah, but I feel like that's also the issue for a lot of guys, a lot of fans, let's not make it a gender thing, is that they watched these guys when they were at the top of their game. And now, after 6, 7, 8 years, they've all either left or become less. Then the fans who used to watch them have spent 6, 7, 8 years watching New Japan. So they're so used to everything, and everything has to be bigger and better to impress them. Versus me, I've taken a break for 2 years, and I'm really invested in what's going on. So I think if fans just took a break.
That's literally what I said. I was saying, because you were saying they've invested in these guys, but then they are not willing to invest in the new future, realizing that their favorites were at that point, like Naito, when he was the Stardust genius, like he wasn't giving anything that you'd expect now.
And they're not, they don't want to give these people the chance. They look at Ren, they look at Shota, they look at Yuya, even Tsuji, and they don't measure up to their memories of what the top guys used to be. But like, that's also not fair, because the top guys had 10, 15 years on them.
There's the other issue. And there's also the other point of previous generations did not get the level of exposure, the current level of even the last wrestlers of the last 20 years did. If you go back and watch Harley Race matches from 1973 and then watch Harley Race matches from 1983, there is not an awful lot of difference, because Harley knew exactly what to do to make those crowds pop at the right time and didn't need to do an awful lot of physical things to do it. But the big difference is he was wrestling on for Dallas TV one night, and he was wrestling for New Orleans TV the next night, and wrestling for Florida TV the next night. He was not overexposed in any market, ever.
I think, and I'm also like, I'm not going to hate on him, but it's linking to Dave Meltzer as well. His star ratings, it's almost like... You expect, like, he's out here giving 6.5 stars, 6¾. Like, the obviously, Tsuji and Uemura had their match at Wrestle Kingdom, then they had the one after the hair versus hair. Personally, while it wasn't as good as their Wrestle Kingdom, I had no issues with it. But as soon as I went on social media, all I saw was, oh, so this is the future. New Japan's dead if they're going to do it. Not realizing that actually it was a good match. Okay, it didn't have the emotion that maybe hair and hair needed it, but they would have never done anything like this. They are born in the system. Whereas maybe if you'd put Doki in it, it would have been a different deal. Like, you've got to give them time to grow, and you can't just judge it on where this person was at this career, or, oh, last week someone on this show had this star rating.
Yeah, that's a big point as well. Like, all these young guys, you see all their matches, and you watch them learn. But if you realize that hair versus hair match is like the second singles match Yuya has had in the company, like, yeah, of course he's not great. Of course he's not like Okada Omega level. Like, there's a lot of expectations for these guys, but no one is sitting down and realizing that they're young and they're new and they're being put in positions some veterans couldn't even handle.
It's almost like their rise to the top is being rushed because of the loss of Jay, Okada, Osprey, and things like that.
It is, but you could also say, people will say, oh, well, yeah, but Okada was rushed back in for his second match, was a championship winning match. It's like, yeah, but Okada, once in generation wrestler.
And he wasn't as popular as people like to say.
No, of course he wasn't, because no one had heard of him.
But also the big Naito lost his Wrestle Kingdom match because of a vote thing. Who was he up against?
Okada. Yeah. Well, you know,
so Okada also didn't win the vote.
No, but that being said, that Shinsuke Nakamura versus Hiroshi Tanahashi, and you could do that now and it would win a vote.
But people like to act like Okada was a star from the very moment and he didn't have any setbacks and it was perfect, and it wasn't. He also took some time to get where he ended up.
It was a perfect push. That doesn't mean he was a massive star.
I think people tend to forget the past of the wrestler. They see the wrestler now and they go, and like you said, it was a perfect push for Okada, but that didn't equate to, like, I mean, I didn't watch it back then, but he probably wasn't putting on 5-star matches all the time when he just first came back. It's just he had this persona. They pushed him in the right way. They didn't try and angle him as a babyface. Whereas with the new set of guys, aside from Narita, they are pushing them as proper baby faces.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also people remember all the good stuff way more. Like, they remember all the amazing matches Okada had. They don't remember the duds, you know?
The match against Yoshihashi when he first came back from excursion.
Shall we move on to match three?
I told you, I go on these tangents and I was like, oh.
It's all right. It's okay. It's amazing we haven't started talking about hair yet. Anyway.
Doki's hair is amazing, though.
It's amazing. There are really not else we can say about it.
It's a crime he lost the tournament.
It's glossy and wonderful. Yes, it is. It's true. The third match we're going to look at is the most recent high-profile match. We're obviously not going to pick, like, you know, a six-man tag from the bottom of a card in a village hall somewhere outside Osaka.
Oh, I could talk about it. I could still talk about it. Don't worry. Give me an hour.
We are going to pick his IWGP Championship match from Pro Wrestling Dontaku earlier this week, where he faced Sho for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. I will link all of these if New Japan World will actually let me link matches individually. It doesn't like me to, but you'll get the idea. We're at the zenith of his career at the particular moment in time, because this is definitely the biggest match he had. He's main eventing, and he's up against the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. Now, the limitations of House of Torture, which we have all gone long into, aside, and this match made me so angry. However, let us remain positive, because we're talking about Dookie. Let's talk about his actual performance in this match, because it was a classic babyface performance, which... even against the match against Hiromu Takahashi, though he was exceptionally popular in the match, I wouldn't really classify it as a babyface kind of performance. It was a restless performance in a kind of like even-handed way, whereas this was an outright babyface performance, partly because it's so difficult to be a heel against Sho. So, yeah. So what was your thoughts on this one, Sonal?
I hated that this was his first title, after the whole thing, because I mentioned earlier, Sho used to be my favorite. I remember Royal Quest 2019. I actually met Sho when you were outside the hotel, and it was like one of the happiest moments of my life.
And
I was like saying to them, I was like, you need to be singles champions. And I hate that this is how Sho is singles champion, as House of Torture.
You made it happen.
I know, but to be fair, I manifested it when Chaos was very strong. But then it was, in the sense, it was a perfect wrestling match, in the sense it was babyface versus heel. But it could have been babyface versus heel without the House of Torture members there. Because Sho can be a great, I think, I have nothing against Sho as a heel. I think it works. He has that persona. Just Sho as a heel in House of Torture, I would have loved to have seen him in War Dogs. That kind of cheating I could have taken. But I don't want to down. Doki was great. He was making the crowds root for him. Every time that House of Torture member came on, it was cheating. The crowds were just cheering him even more. So in that sense, he did the perfect job. And I don't know. I think I thought that Doki might have it. I thought he was going to win. I knew it was unrealistic. But I did think...
I wouldn't have been unhappy with him winning this. I would have been very happy. Obviously, I'm going to be very happy anytime House of Torture lose anything. However, I think, I don't think it's unrealistic. I think probably they've had to kind of like switch plans on the fly, obviously, with Yo's injury, and you've got Best of Super Juniors coming up, and that kind of like puts a fly in the ointment of what you can do with that championship, because you've kind of got to like put it on a safe pair of hands during that tournament. And, you know, Sho can eat pins all the way through that tournament and still come out on top as champion. You can do something with them afterwards, whereas you can't do that with a newly crowned champion and then have them lose all the way through. That's not going to work. So I think it's unfortunate circumstances that his shot came at this particular time. But yeah, I agree with you. It was intriguing, the body language he had in this match compared to the other two matches we've watched, where you've seen him essentially go from Rudos to kind of not tweener, but a little bit towards the babyface side, to fully embracing that and using that in his match storytelling. I think it's really interesting the way that developed. Christy, what's your thoughts on it?
I'm probably the one who doesn't care about the House of Torture interference the most. Like, it didn't bother me at all. you know it's going to happen. And like James said, I kind of figured Doki was going to lose, because if you don't want to create a champion right before Best of Super Juniors, especially if it's his first reign, because then either Best of Super Juniors takes away from his win,
yeah,
and him becoming champion, or the other way around, him being champion is more important to people than the big junior tournament that you're running. So I figured it was easier for them to stick with Show, also because then the winner of Best of Super Juniors is possibly the one who's going to save everyone from the horrible champion, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's going to give you a massive babyface pop.
Yeah, so I went into this expecting Doki to lose. So when it happened, it didn't bother me so much. But you guys talk about Doki as a babyface. I think Doki is definitely a babyface here, and he works like a babyface, but he also has the I'm still an asshole underneath kind of vibe to him. Like, he's a babyface, but if you push him too far, he can absolutely revert back to heel tendencies. And I think Doki is one of those guys who straddles the line of babyface and heel quite well, in that it doesn't feel unrealistic for him to turn heel in like one or two matches, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think this goes back to the Roddy Piper thing of he would always go into a territory as a babyface. Sorry, as a heel, because he could always turn babyface. It always gave you that second option. And if they hate you, they'll love you. And
yeah.
I think that dynamic in Japan works differently because it's such a long period of time for somebody to be a heel or a babyface. You're talking 5 or 6 years, maybe an entire career before they turn.
Tanahashi is still trying to turn.
Tanahashi's had heel runs, but not in New Japan when he was out of contract, because they let Hiroshi Tanahashi go out of contract. What were they thinking?
Did you ever watch, I don't know if you have Wrestle Universe, I don't anymore, but one of the first DDT matches I ever watched was him and a young lion, Yo, going over to DDT, and he was such a heel. I was so obsessed with him.
He hated working in DDT as well. So, yeah, he couldn't understand why they kept sending him, because they had a talent swap agreement. But yeah,
it was funny. Like,
he did the Championship Carnival tournament 1 year when he was out of contract, and he was a heel then. But it was obviously going to work because he's a New Japan guy and he's wrestling in All Japan, so obviously he's going to be a heel. And I've seen him turn heel on specific nights, wrestling Nakamura in Tokyo. No point in being a babyface, is there really? So yeah, but I think that length of time really just does kind of like make people think about the service that they've done to the fans to entertain them. And that's where Doki is making his hay right now as a babyface, because hey, he's put the time in for us. He's done it. He's wrestled all of those house shows in the middle of nowhere on back end tours, tagging in Suzuki Gun, and he's done all that work for us to entertain us. We should support him.
I feel like that's where House of Torture are heading in a couple of years, but let's not talk about again. I did want to mention something about Doki as a character. I feel like when I saw Just Five Guys run out to save him, that was just like amazing for him, because you have this lonely warrior, you know, who's talked about being alone in Mexico all these years and how hard it was for him, and then he made it to New Japan, and yes, he was in Suzuki Gun, and yes, he had friends there, but he was the runt of the family, you know.
Friends, the latecomer. Were they friends? People who didn't beat you up and kept you around.
Yeah, but Suzuki Gun were always the type to hit each other in a way that was their affection.
Yes.
But still, like Doki, yes, obviously he and Despy are friends, but in a character kayfabe sort of sense, he was at the very bottom. And I'm sure if you asked Lance Archer who is Doki, he would have been like, who? For the longest time. But now he's in affection who come out to save him. The lonely guy, the lonely warrior, who spent all those years by himself in a foreign country, now has guys who come running to save him. And if Sanada hadn't been injured, I'm sure he would have come running too. Mm. versus can you imagine Suzuki running out to save Doki? No way. No.
Suzuki Gun's a bit like LIJ in that sense, is that they were always very much like they kept themselves to themselves in the match. If there was chaos, like even now for LIJ, it takes a lot for them to come out.
And I also see Suzuki as the one who's like, if you're in a position where you're losing or you're getting beat down, that's your fault.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. You're here to dominate. That's the whole point.
if you're losing or are you getting beat down, that's on you for not being stronger or smarter or realizing that this was going to happen.
Yes.
So
because that's the Yoshiki Fujiwara taught me to do it this way, so that's the way it has to be done.
Yeah. So you have this guy who's by himself in a strange country, who's lowest of the low in third match on the card with 20 people there, and the ref is getting more over than you. And then the final match is him being the total baby face, everyone wanting him to win against the kind of heel that he used to be in Mexico, you know? And he has people who care about him running out to save him. And I feel like that's the progression that Doki's made throughout the years.
So, Snell, have you got any final thoughts on Doki and his career and what you've watched from these three matches?
Yeah, especially seeing we've gone from like the right at the beginning to the most recent, it's crazy to see how far he has gone. Like, I remember last year I joked, I bet you at some point next year Doki is going to be IWGP Junior Champion. And I said it as like, oh, a wish, but now it seems like it could happen. There was always complaints that the junior division was getting stale, that they had like only like four or five people at the top, which was like Despy, Hiromu, Ishimori, maybe like Robbie Eagles and that. But seeing what they've done with Doki and how, like, as we assume, like, it's a very last minute thing after what happened with Yo, it feels like they are now getting ready to push Doki as one of the guys that they can rely on in the junior division and give him not just amazing matches, but give him an amazing story arc. And I'm still going to put out, at some point in next year, Doki will be champion.
I hope so.
How do we feel he's going to do in Best of Super Juniors?
I at first thought he might do really well, but seeing he's just had a title match, I feel like he's going to do a lot better than normal because of that. But I had a prediction a few months ago, and I still think it's going to be that.
So, I can see him getting to a semi-final now.
But when he first did his Super Junior, no one would ever have imagined that. Because did he come with 0 or 2 points?
2 points.
Yeah, 2 points. Last year, he had worse results than the year before, I think. The same results as the year before.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets given the Yo role in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What they had envisioned for Yo. Because obviously, if he were champion, they weren't going to have him win. So he might just reach the semi-final and then lose.
Yeah, because I think this is my prediction, and it's a prediction. I think Fujita might win just because he has been saying stuff about wanting to be the youngest ever champion, and he only has until Dominion to do that. So
yeah.
Are we guessing what the
final? I don't want to wish things into existence, because the moment we do, someone hears it and we can't have it.
Yeah, Gato's listening.
I'm still going to say it. I think if I had to guess right now based on nothing, Despy Akira.
But I feel like Despy's going open weight now.
Well, he could lose, but I remember Akira having an amazing match with Desperado. Mm. And I feel like that's a story they could tell. So you could have like, I don't know if it's possible because I don't have all the names in my head, but you could have a TJP versus Akira semifinal. And then maybe Desperado Eagles. Is that possible?
Ooh, that would be. I'm not just, sure the blocks, actually.
I'm going to look up the block announcements.
Or Desperado Doki. Is that possible? I don't know who's in which block.
Wikipedia, where are you?
I think TJP and Akira are in the same block.
So, Block A is Blake Christian, Bushi, Clark Connors, El Desperado, Hayata.
I think that was last year.
No.
Blake Christian's out this year, is he?
Blake Christian's in this year's tournament. He wasn't in last year's tournament. Yeah. Yeah, he was announced.
Why? I literally thought I knew all the names, apparently. Not.
Let's try this in. Blake Christian from GCW, Bushi, Clark Connors, El Desperado, Hayato, your current GHC National Heavyweight Champion in Noah, Kevin Knight, Kasei Fujita, Titan, TJP, and Yoshinobu Kanemura is Block A. Block B is Duki, Dragon Dia, Driller Maloney, Francesco Akira, Hiromu Takahashi, Kushida, Ninja Mac, Robbie Eagles Show, and Teiji Ishimori. I do love
how are the semifinals? Is that second in the block versus first in the block of the other?
Yeah, it's Block A, but usually it's Block A winner versus Block B runner-up, and then Block B winner versus Block A runner-up.
Yeah, so you could have TJP Akira.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could do, yeah.
I mean, this is based on nothing.
I think they've been teasing that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll end up being completely wrong. But
oh, I'm always wrong. I think the only time I've ever been right on any prediction is last year's G1 with Naito, but I think everybody knew Naito was going to win that.
It was a coronation. That was.
I also wouldn't be surprised if it's like Fujita Eagles in a semi-final.
Ooh, a TMDK. Ooh, that would be interesting.
And either of them, like, ruins it for the other.
Mm.
I feel like that would work for other, but I feel like it wouldn't work for TMDK. I think they're too close.
No, I mean as in, like, Eagles beating Fujita ruins Fujita's attempt at being the youngest champion, and Fujita beating Eagles, well, that would be a real crush to his confidence, you know, the young lion beats me. That might be a reason why, like, Eagles turns or something.
I don't think they can turn him again.
Yeah, he's moved faction more than anyone I think who's ever moved faction.
Well, that's why it could happen.
Well, yeah. I just love the fact that Hayata went and won a heavyweight championship the moment he's entered into Best of Super Juniors.
Well, TJP is also a heavyweight, supposedly, so...
he's an odd one. I think he's, like, basically, like... Whereas some people have said they're openweight, so I know Clark said it, Dan Maloney and Despy. He's like, oh, you know what? I can be a junior, but I can be a heavyweight. And I quite like that, because I don't know if anyone... Maybe Ospreay might have done it, but I don't think anyone has been that open about, like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that.
Ospreay was an openweight champion whilst he was in the junior heavyweight division, but he didn't wrestle in the junior heavyweight division after that.
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry. I just don't like TJP as a person. So.
Neither do I. It's fine. we were discussing him earlier this week because, so now I'll get this. He was a few years ago when he wrestled as Manic / Suicide in Impact Wrestling. Now, TNA Wrestling, once again. Mm-hmm. He did say online, through his Twitter account, that he was going to wear his Manchester United top to the O2 Arena when the O2 venue in Manchester. Which
always risky, always very risky.
Oh, yes, I was going to say, which is a building equal distance between Longsight and Moss Side, which, if you know Manchester, is not the best place to be wearing anything red.
That's not me.
I mean, I don't know Manchester, but I know... Man U and Man City's issues, so I can imagine.
Wonderful way of putting that, Christy. Issues.
Issues, yeah.
Yes, I advised him against it. I'm not sure they actually got, there was the time when they actually forgot, well, stopped putting money into touring, so they may not end up going, but yes.
After all of that, they were like, nah.
They hired Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff instead.
As you do,
and then they stopped putting money into live events because they couldn't afford to run live events.
One of the few situations where I go, you should have gone with TJP.
Yes, true. Now, what can you do?
Sorry, I'm sorry if he's like a favorite of yours.
What, Hulk Hogan, no, Eric Bischoff, or TJP?
I have a soft spot for TJP. I remember when, because when I started watching WWE, it was the Cruiserweight Classic. And I was a really big fan of all of the wrestlers in that. And I remember I went to my first live show. I had like a TJP banner, but he didn't actually come.
Oh.
To be fair, I had a banner for all of the, I had like a 205 Live one. I think I was the only one who specifically went for 205 Live.
That's really cool, though. That's awesome.
I did actually get on camera because I had ringside.
Oh,
nice. Like you can see my 205 Live poster just there.
I've only ever been ringside live for a show once, because I went to see King of Trios in Wolverhampton, and it was British Strong Style versus Sendai Girls, and I managed to get front row seats for that.
I wasn't really ringside.
It was the only ticket left.
If you see WWE matches, when the entrance is, if you're like either side of the ring entrance, you can run to the barricade bit. So I did that, and my mum was like, I didn't care for like SmackDown Live because it was a taping. But when I was 205 Live, my mum was like pushing me. She was like, go with your banners.
I like how you watch WWE, but you watched like the more artistic show of WWE.
Yeah, but my main love was at that time was 205 Live and NXT.
There you go. You see, you erred towards the quote unquote real wrestling fan.
The real wrestling.
The quote unquote real wrestling fan.
Don't get that started.
I know. I'm not. I'm just saying we embrace the love of all wrestling on this show, don't we, Christy?
I do.
Yes, I do too.
I mean, I respect all of it. I don't like all of it, but I respect it.
There you go. You see. Yes, because all wrestling is great.
Yeah.
That is all of it.
And that, about ringside. Mm-hmm. I've been to 5 shows in my life. One was a WWE show, which I wasn't ringside for. 2 of them were RevPro New Japan combined shows,
mm-hmm.
where I was on the front row.
Cool.
For both of them. And then 2 of my Eve shows. I went to Eve twice. And if you... so now might not know this, but Eve used to be in this very small venue.
Arguably everyone's front row.
Well, I had a special kind of front row because I was friends with Emily, one of the promoters, and she knew I have anxiety issues and crowds are not a good fit with me. So within like 20 minutes, I was like, Emily, this is not going to work. And she was like, okay, well, I have a special spot for you to sit. So she took me upstairs to where the wrestlers would change and where all the sound guys were. And it was above the ring. And she said, you can look through the curtains. So I watched both of the events from above through the curtains. And I've talked about this with James. James, do you remember who I sat next to for most of the shows?
Emi Sakura, wasn't it?
Emi Sakura, yes.
Yes.
She was like right next to me. We were watching together. We didn't speak at all, but we did watch both of the shows together.
There you go. Emi Sakura, wrestling genius.
So kind of front row.
Yeah.
That's a special kind of front row where you literally are like up close and personal with the wrestlers.
That's if you're sat next to Emi Sakura, then obviously that's the best front row ever.
Yeah. Exactly. There were a couple of the women who went upstairs to change as well. So I had a brief conversation with Charlie Morgan.
Charlie's lovely.
Yeah, Jamie Hayter was there as well.
There you go.
Big names.
Yeah.
And I knew who they were, but I never really seen them because I've been to like 5 shows. So it was kind of cool to get to meet them and get to see them, and then meet Meiko Satomura as well.
Yeah.
And then years later, they're big stars in like AEW, like Jamie Hayter. So
yeah,
kind of cool. Not that I watch AEW, but
I watch AEW when there are New Japan wrestlers, ex-New Japan wrestlers on.
I don't even have patience for that.
I watch AEW when there's nothing else to watch. I have a friend called Chrissy, who every Sunday night we have an hour's watching wrestling, and we pick a show and we go through that show. And sometimes it's AEW. If we want something like something where we're not that bothered, we'll watch Rampage because it's only an hour. And if we want to watch something serious, we watch like TNA or AEW.
Serious, I like that.
Well, we used to watch Impact Wrestling every Sunday night when it used to be on Challenge, and that's where our tradition started. And then at one point, they hired that many people who were just awful. And we said, we can't possibly watch this anymore. It's just like, it was Elgin and Callahan. And it was like, oh my God, I hate all of these people. And oh, it's rubbish. Can we watch something else? We started watching NWA then for a bit before they hired a bunch of horrible, horrible people. So yeah. And then now we kind of like float around all promotions. And we have sometimes, yeah. one week we watched an old, I think it was the second Royal Rumble or an old Royal Rumble, and went, oh, half these people are dead now. That's not good. yes. It's not that long ago either. It was like, I know it wasn't. It was the 98 Royal Rumble, and we're like, oh, they're no longer with us. They passed away. Ooh, this is really sad. Anyway.
Can I ask one more question about Zoki before we end?
We can. You can, yes.
If you could choose any feud, who would you like him to feud?
Real or imagined?
New Japan wrestlers, but it can be heavyweight.
Realistic or no realistic?
Not realistic. Ah, you get to decide.
But I'm trying to think, has Doki and Yo been done? I feel like it was done in the Best of Super Junior, wasn't it?
Yeah, but feud is like a couple of matches and then a big end of.
You got to have at least one tour of tag team matches before you get to the end of the tour.
What I want, this is my dream, and this is never going to happen, so I'm going to say it anyway. A feud between Yo and Doki, but I want it to end, you know, like the Wato and Desperado one did, where they became best friends.
Oh, yeah.
No, not best friends. Wato was best friends with Despy, but Despy was just, like, indifferent. But I want that.
Oh, Wato was perfectly in love with the guy. Let's not.
Yeah. I want that, but, like, I want mutual love between the two of them.
Well, I like that idea, but I like the idea where Doki doesn't want him to know that he likes him just as much.
Oh, yeah. Unrequited love.
Well, it kind of, it feels like unrequited love, but it really isn't. And like he gives him the cold shoulder all the time, but then he's like, where's Yo? Why isn't he here? Like, you told him to fuck off. Oh, I didn't mean literally. I would like that. That sounds really funny.
I'd like him to go against someone that's got a completely different style, like Chris Ridgeway from Noah. Not because there's no one who's really shooty in the junior heavyweight division in New Japan at the moment. So someone like Chris Ridgway or someone like Junior Hayato, who's just completely different, and just to see what he could do with them, because I think he's so adaptable. It would be really interesting to see how he goes against someone who's just completely different. So like, I would like to see him against a proper mat worker. I suppose Despy would do that role, but Despy does everything really well. But I want specifically somebody who's very kind of mat wrestling orientated to do something completely different than he hasn't done before.
I was going to try to go for someone
who is a junior, but Zach style. So Chris Ridgway is the closest person I could think of. So yeah, that kind of person. I'd like to see him get Zach, but he's not going to win. Whereas we're against Chris, there's a level of equality,
like.
Yeah, you know, like a upper card Noah guy versus a lower card junior.
James is not very good as had hypothetical matches you can choose.
He
always
has
to bring it back to reality.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, that was like getting a Noah Jr. versus the New Japan Jr. is pretty out there for my taste. So,
yeah. Yeah, but you're like, well, it can't be Zach because Zach is a heavyweight. I'm like, yeah. I said anyone.
anyone. Yeah, but then he would lose, so no.
Yeah, and that's also, you get to choose.
In a fantasy world, that would happen and Doki would beat Zach.
Yeah, but exactly. I don't like that because that just goes against everything I believe in.
Yeah, I
don't know what you believe in. It's fantasy.
No, I can't do that.
I completely agree with you, but James and I are just very different on that. I always ask James these questions and he tries.
Bless
him. That's why I asked you.
No, this. I have very few anxiety things, but it's like asking me to fantasy book a wrestling show with them just being allowed to do anything. No, can't do that. No, absolutely not. I have to go with the prevailing narrative that's been presented before me.
Okay, well, if I could choose, I would like to see Doki and Fujita a year from now.
Ooh, that'd be interesting. Yeah. Yes, yeah, that'd be really cool. I'd like that. Yeah.
So not now. I still would like to see a Fujita now versus Doki, but I think a year from now when he's really established himself and is even more confident, if that's possible, in what he does, I think they could have a great match because they are similar in ways, but also very different in styles. I would love to see that.
There you go. Well, I guess we better wrap up this episode. It's been a fun conversation to have. Sanal, where can we find you on the internet?
Well, yeah, normally people have these really fancy, like, outros. They're like, follow me here, follow me. You can find me on Twitter at wrestling_chat, and I'm on YouTube at Sonal's Life. I try and post as much as I can. Life sometimes gets in the way, but I do try and be up to date with all the latest shows, reviews, previews, and things like that.
Okay. Christy, where can we find you on the internet?
I'm going to be even more brief and just say you can find me on Twitter at SmarkInfested.
I'm not allowed to mention Instagram to Christy anymore because last time she did this, she remembered that she had an Instagram account, figured out how to get into it, and then went, oh my God, I've got to edit this now. So.
Yeah, I had to unfollow a lot of people as well. I was like, oh, I followed this guy? Oh my God, no.
Just this horror that is in my mentions, yes.
Yes.
You can find me at Sheriff Lonestar on Twitter, at Sheriff Lonestar TX on Instagram, and at Sheriff Lonestar on Mastodon. You can find the show on Twitter, Troopany Show, and on Instagram as Troopany Show, Facebook, The Troopany Show, and on Patreon, The Troopany Show, where you keep the show free forever for everyone. We will be back next week. We will be talking more about professional wrestling. That's as far as I've got so far.
You don't know what we're talking about?
No, we haven't discussed anything yet. No one.
Okay.
We've got as far as this week. I think we pre-booked a bunch of stuff, and now we've run out of that bunch of stuff.
Okay.
So,
New Japan is still doing shows.
Yes, so. There's a bunch of New Japan shows this weekend. We could. I feel the time has come for a soft ground wrestling show. African wrestling seems to be the way forward. Everyone's going nuts for it, and the guys from GLAIT went a couple of weeks ago, and they just released a little mini documentary about how they went over there. I think that would be cool. But I've got to get somebody else's.
Like something that someone else is going to.
This sounds like the least Christy thing in the world.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. You know, it's not the thing that you do.
No, I need investment.
Yes, yes. I think you would like it. It's story based. It's about.
I'm sure I would.
It's about oppression. And,
That's. I was going to say that's totally my thing, but that sounds really wrong.
No,
the
narrative of release from oppression is your thing, not the actual oppression. Yeah.
As people know who listen to the show, I just don't have the time or the energy to invest more into another promotion. And I already invest a lot of time and effort and energy into New Japan. So.
Oh, I feel you. I had to. 2 years ago, I was watching New Japan DDT and Tokyo Joshi. At the start of last year, I had to drop to DDT and Tokyo Joshi because if anyone knows their schedules, it's even more unexpected than New Japan.
Yes.
And I was just struggling to keep up, like, with anything. And then they added Noah, and I was like, I want to watch Noah. And then that was even worse. So I had to cancel it. I was like, I can't invest. I work full-time. This is not a thing.
No.
Yeah, and I get really obsessed with what I watch. And I want to pay attention to everything and do it justice. So I enjoy watching Tokyo Joshi Pro because it's how do I explain it? There are stories to it, but it's not the way New Japan does, where if you don't
pay attention... It's very lighthearted and fun.
Yeah. So in New Japan, if you don't pay attention for a couple of weeks, you're like, what the hell happened? And with Tokyo Joshi Pro, you can jump in whenever you want. So I do sometimes watch Tokyo Joshi Pro, but any other promotion, I'm like, I would need to invest a lot of time into this before I feel comfortable talking about it with people. Yeah. And that's one of the joys for me, is talking to people about what I love. So,
yeah. So someone was trying to persuade me and Christy to do an AEW podcast with them. We were like,
no, I'm sorry.
Someone said to me, oh, can you start doing AEW reviews and stuff? I was like, no. I barely have the mind capacity to do all the New Japan stuff. Never mind AEW.
It's there's nothing wrong with AEW. It's lovely, just not our cup of tea.
Yeah, like unless you like, I watched one of the shows last week. I watched the Royal Rumble that I didn't care about just because I saw that there was an interaction between Jay and Ospreay. It's like, I need the Chaos reunion. That's the only reason I watched it.
Yeah, that's all I know too. It's like stuff on Twitter that gets shared.
Yeah.
So everything I know about AEW is because of Twitter friends.
Yeah. Okay then. We will leave it there. But thank you very much for your time, both of you. And thank you very much for listening. You can find us on SoundCloud and YouTube and all of the other places you get your podcasts from. We hope you've been enjoying the shows. And we'll speak to you next week. Take care. Bye.